Good evening and welcome to the Independent News Hour. I'm John Tarleton, Editor-in-Chief of The Independent, New York City's lefty newspaper and website. You can find our beautiful April print edition in our red and white news boxes across the city and in more than 60 public libraries and other public venues. We're also online at independent.org, independent.org. I'm joined today by The Independent's Associate Editor, Amber Gagarian.
Hi, John. It's great to be here with you and all of our listeners on 99.5 FM and streaming on WBAI.org.
For today's show, we'll hear first from housing activists who are lambasting the pro-landlord anti-tenant provisions in the state budget deal that New York Governor Kathy Hochul announced on Friday following weeks of closed-door negotiations with State Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins and Assembly Speaker Carl Heastie.
Then we'll speak with Independent photographer Neil Constantine, who was arrested yesterday while covering a massive pro-Palestine tax day protest as it crossed the Brooklyn Bridge. We will also get updates on the growing worldwide movement to end the genocide in Gaza and the occupation in Palestine.
In our final segment later in the show, we'll speak with Cynthia A. Carter, president of UAW Local 2330 here in New York, which represents legal aid workers who have been on strike for the past 8 weeks.
But first, we turn to New York's affordable housing crisis, which Governor Kathy Hochul and state legislative leaders are poised to make much worse. On Friday, Hochul announced that she'd reached a state budget agreement that includes provisions that will roll back protections for New York City's 950,000 rent-stabilized tenants that were enacted. Sorry, these protections were enacted in 2019, as well as pass only a watered-down version of the good cause eviction protection for tenants who don't live in rent-stabilized apartments, as well as gifting billions in subsidies for real estate developers to build much more luxury housing. The full legislature still needs to vote on the budget deal. Yesterday, tenant groups held an emergency rally outside of Governor Hochul's Midtown office. Now we're going to hear from Joel Feingold, tenant organizer with Crown Heights Tenant Union.
They're holding our apartments hostage. They're holding our blocks hostage. And right now, Governor Hochul is trying to push through the legislature a budget that would reinstate the eviction bonuses that were illegal before the year 2019. Are we going to allow that? Of our communities, of our neighborhoods, of our blocks, of our buildings.
No!
Are we going to fight for new rights?
Yes!
Are we going to abolish deregulation in all its forms?
Yes!
The city and state of New York.
Yes!
Are we going to reduce rents?
Yes!
Are we going to build tenant power?
Yes!
Are we going to abolish the landlord system one of these days?
Yes!
All right!
So, again, that was Joel Feingold, tenant organizer with Crown Heights Tenant Union, speaking yesterday outside of Governor Kathy Hochul's Midtown office at an emergency rally. Joining now to talk more about this dire situation for tenants is Johnny Rivera, a longtime resident of East Harlem, tenant organizer himself, and a member of the Democratic Socialists of America Bronx and Upper Manhattan chapter. Johnny Rivera, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Great. We're happy to have you here with us. So let's get right into it. Tell us about how this, you know, proposed state budget deal guts part of the rent stabilization protections that were passed as a part of that major 2019 pro-tenant housing reform.
Right. We had a great accomplishments as tenants and part of the housing movement in this state, where we got the Housing Stability Tenant Protection Act of 2019. And it made permanent affordability rates. It eliminated the vacancy bonus that you heard earlier Joel mention. The vacancy bonus is really an incentive. The more you can move people out of the apartment and increase the rent and then get them out and get somebody else in, was really the one of the incentives to get landlords to behave poorly. And when that was eliminated or stopped, landlords just never gave up figuring out what else could they do to suck more money out of the tenants. And so So that's the piece that really hurts, that it's maybe right back on the table again in existence, besides a few other changes as well.
Right. And let's also talk about good cause eviction. New York has a sort of a two-tier system here where people who live in buildings that were built before 1974 and that have six or more units often qualify for rent stabilization protections, and people who live in buildings that don't meet those parameters have almost no protection. And one of the only measures that didn't get passed in that historic 2019 rent law was good cause eviction. Tenant activists have campaigned for it ever since. State Senator Julia Salazar of DSA has been a leader in this as well in the legislature. And we're finally going to get a good cause eviction, but it appears to be so watered down as to be almost useless.
Right. The good cause eviction is for the non-rent stabilized units. Everyone is struggling to pay their rent. They should have some level of certainty that rents are not going to skyrocket when the lease expires. So the proposal was to tie it to the consumer price index, or 5%, whichever makes more sense. However, I think the current so-called good cause eviction is something very different. It's kept the name, but cities in the state of New York will have to opt in. So it's very different in that respect. New construction will have to be exempt from participating in that regulation. And owner occupied of 8 units or less can also not participate. So that leaves a few other folks who are now, they could see their rent go up to 10%. I think it's almost as high as 10%, and tied into also, and in addition to that, if I understood correctly, plus the consumer price index. So the issue of affordability escapes the legislators and the governor this go around, and they had all the power to enforce it and protect it. And to say that they've kept good cause is outrageous to use the name when there's no good cause whatsoever, only for the landlord. So let's be clear on that. The landlord gets to have all the benefits, and the tenants are at risk, and we'll probably see more homeless people in the state of New York.
Right. Yeah, that does seem to be, Johnny, like the likely outcome of all of this. So let's talk a little bit more about the direct impact of this on tenants. Like, what will someone like you potentially face? And then particularly, you know, how this will affect older tenants that have been in their apartments for a long time, in rent stabilized apartments who aren't paying, you know, very much compared to what market rate apartments are now in the city. Outrageous.
So like I said at the rally yesterday, I'm 61 years old. I only have a couple more years in the workforce. I won't be bringing in more income. That's for sure. Probably less. I've been a rent stabilized tenant for over now probably 23 years. So I would probably have be marked as a target by my landlord to find ways to get me out when I'm getting older and I don't have the resources to find another place. And this proposed legislation that's coming down the pipeline that HOCO is making possible would threaten seniors, would threaten other folks who have been around, who rely on having a place to stay. Look, you know, we cannot, any of us, you know, first of all, housing is a human right, and we cannot rely on instability to maintain our families and plan our futures, even our retirement. is at stake here. And the last thing we need is the pressure of not knowing why the landlord is not making repairs, why the landlord continues to ignore my request for repairs, and finds more other ways, very creative ways, to apply pressure to get me out. Because they're incentivized, landlords will be incentivized to move people like me and others out to make more money. And I've raised my family here, and I want to stay here. I was born and raised in East Harlem, and I think I should stay here for until the end, basically.
Right. We're talking to tenant organizer Johnny Rivera here on 99.5 FM. Johnny, earlier we played that clip of the rally in front of Governor Hochul's Midtown office that occurred yesterday after y'all learned of this budget agreement at the end of last week and had to scramble to pull yesterday's protest together. What else are y'all doing to try to stop this very harmful legislation from passing in the coming days?
There's simultaneous organizing efforts in Albany, in the city, protests of various types, efforts to call legislators, a petition that's circulating at this point. We really need to keep the pressure on. We do believe that when tenants unite, we can win. And we don't think it's an accident that Hochul came out and said, we have the parameters of a deal. However, housing and immigration, housing and I think the local school board structure or the mayoral control is still need some fine details. I think the opportunity is still here for all of us to call our governor and say, enough is enough. Tenants are not ATM machines. We need protection. We need stability. We are the workforce of this city, and some of us are getting older and won't be able to continue. We don't need a group of older homeless population in this state.
Right. Also, I'm on the Housing Justice for All website. That's housingjusticeforall.org, and there's a button that says "Take Action," where people can sign petitions and do other things to try to let Governor Hochul know where they stand on this.
Right, and so this came as. I mean, even though we've known that the housing situation is dire here and that the governor and the real estate interests are sort of against us as tenants, this still felt like a surprise because the tenants were so powerful in 2019. You know, it was really you all in the tenant movement in the city and beyond that was able to push those protections. So what has changed between now and then, right? We have the same legislative leaders who signed off in 2019 on those positive reforms. And now it seems like they're going in the total opposite direction. Meanwhile, I cover the tenant movement on the streets in the city, and it doesn't feel like the movement is waning. A lot of new TAs, tenant associations, have been built in the past few years. And there's been a stronger connection between Brooklyn and Bronx. So what do you think's going on?
Well, first of all, I think our Albany allies are still hanging on. Why the governor had to kind of be general about the topic around housing. There's still hope. And in a democracy, the hope comes when the people call and pressure the legislators. I also think, Albany, the landlord class has offered a lot of money for the silence of some legislators and for the proactive support in the hope and promise of trading something else going on. But that's always a given. Legislators are always under pressure, but they have to adhere that at the end, the voters, which are the majority, the tenants, which are much more majority than the landlords, will exert that right in the electoral arena in favor or against those who stand in the interest of the tenants. And so I'm not sure exactly on the details of what's happened right now, but it's clear that Hochul is the champion of the landlords. That's not going to change. But all the other legislators can stand up to her and say no and vote no and vote down the proposed budget for this year.
So, yeah, it seems like once again we have a situation here where it's the power of big money versus the power of the people, and we're going to be continuing to follow this situation in the coming days. Johnny Rivera, we thank you so much for joining us on WBA this evening. Johnny Rivera, tenant organizer from East Harlem with the Democratic Socialists of America. We'll be back with more after this short break.
Desperate measures lead to death. From the mouth of Gabriel, who died in his sleep when the world was a very big mess, a very big mess. He saw too much. From now on, I will look away from every accident that may have come my way. So while you were torn up above the ale throne, masquerading as a loophole, if I saw things no one else would see as well. From the mouth of Gabriel, no one else would hear as well. From the mouth of Gabriel, from the mouth of Gabriel, from the mouth of Gabriel. Estranged, I hardly know who you are this time, and what a mess I've made of you. You probably would, but I won't let you run away. You probably should, but I won't. Don't be afraid of loneliness. Some refugee beside itself. Instead of
we're listening to Sufjan Stevens from the mouth of Gabriel. Always good to visit Stevens' great, beautiful mind and voice. Moving into some darker content, relevant content. We'll be excited to be joined here in a second by one of our very own indie photographer, Neil Constantine. But first, I'll set the stage. Yesterday, tax day, thousands of protesters joined Within Our Lifetime Palestine in front of the New York Stock Exchange on Wall Street to protest U.S. investment and trade in the Israeli war machine and the use of their taxpaying dollars to kill tens of thousands of Palestinians in Gaza since October 7th. We're going to hear from the protesters.
This is called the people's night.
This is called the people's night.
Because we can't use speakers.
Because we can't use speakers.
Since the city and state. With the help of the NYPD. Are doing everything they can.
Because we contradict their narrative.
Because a majority of the people.
And that was Nardine Kiswani, co-founder of Within Our Lifetime, very prominent pro-Palestine group here in New York City, grassroots group out of Bay Ridge. And she's not wrong. A majority of U.S. citizens polled have said that they want a ceasefire. So so protesters after that, after they were at the stock exchange, they marched to the Brooklyn Bridge, and some were able to get on the bridge and begin to march on the bridge. I was there after they got blocked off. The first group that made it onto the bridge were followed by an enormous, what we could say, troops of police, right? We had SRG, we had the bike units, plenty of white shirts, the commanders, all out for the Palestine protests, of course. Another group went down into the subway and was able to continue their protest into downtown Brooklyn, Borough Hall, etc. The group that went, sorry, I'm speaking a little fast. The group that went over the bridge were chased down by those masses of police who ended up arresting dozens yesterday, including one of our very own photographer, photojournalist Neil Constantine. And then we had another indie reporter who was on the scene who said that he saw another two journalists that were being apprehended. We got confirmation another one of those was also an indie photographer. So they're really going after the people journalists here. These journalists are wearing their press passes. And then, you know, but after, you know, after everyone was coming out of jail, like I said, there were dozens of arrested. Nardine Kiswani, who we just heard from, was arrested again after being violently arrested on Friday. So again, they're really pushing down on these protests. There was some celebration, and Nardine began to lead a chant, and Neil was right there, also having just gotten out of jail at One Police Plaza, and they joined in with jail support, and they were revelatory. So let's listen to that another thought of the protesters here. All right, well, that was supposed to be ending by saying, Gaza, Gaza, you arise, Palestine will never die, which is the sentiment of a lot of this Palestinian diaspora that is here protesting for their homeland as their loved ones are being genocided, you know, with their own money. So Neil Constantine is here, who took that footage last night right after he got out of jail. Neil, welcome to the show.
Hi, how is everyone doing?
Doing okay. How are you?
Doing
more
good.
Importantly.
I'm happy to be free. Happy to not be in a jail cell surrounded by our near NYPD. It was a wild day. It was a day full of commotion, day full of emotion, day full of illegalities being performed by the NYPD, and also just an unfortunate scene that unfolded on the bridge and also thereafter in Grand Army Plaza, as I had heard. I don't know where you would like me to start, but you know.
Yeah, I want you to tell me a little bit about some of what you saw and heard regarding, like, you know, you've been at these protests a lot. They've been violently policed. This one does seem particularly violent in that, like, blood was drawn. I heard maybe a protester was dragged across the ground. Could you retell some of the stuff you told me yesterday?
Well, in recent weeks especially, police have been cracking down and using, I don't want to say, well, I guess you could say loopholes, but using means of not being on the sidewalk as a way to wrangle and arrest a bunch of protesters and or target leaders of movements. And so what they've been doing is doing exactly that ever since, I would say, the mid-January areas when they started to really crack down on it. And Within Our Lifetime, from what I've witnessed over the several weeks since that, has been one of the ones that had the hardest, I think, as far as like police just immediately not even giving warning some of the time. There was a recent on Friday where the police accosted people and arrested Nerdine also. And they had taken her a job off that night, wouldn't fix it, violating or like civil rights across the board. And it's just prevalent. It just seems like they keep amping it up. And one of the other things in the past couple of weeks I've noticed is that them going after press.
Yeah.
I witnessed and photographed a press person a week or two ago that was arrested by police. And I had been told that that person wasn't even in the street. And that was dealing with another situation, but they were still arrested. Press credentials clearly shown, clearly visible. And that's exactly what ended up happening to me, because the march made its way through the financial district and made its way to the bridge, tried to get on at one side, got blocked, and then went around and then went to the other side. And then from there is when police started being aggressive, being violent with the arrest unnecessarily. Several people said that, you know, the age-old tactic of yelling, stop resisting, as they slam people to the ground that were clearly not fighting back in any sort of vein. And so onto the bridge, it got separated, so there weren't as many. There was like over 1,000 people starting at the Wall Street area. And on the bridge, it got separated once the police kind of cordoned off the entrances. And so about, I would say, between 100, 200 people were on the bridge and we're making our way, and no one's being violent towards cars. No one. It's just, you know, it's stopping traffic. It's a protest and it's going its way. And then eventually police, a large amount came from behind the strategic response group and others on their bicycles and on by foot. And what I've also was told that on the other side of the bridge, which I didn't get to see this because I got arrested halfway point, but that there was a massive amount of police on the other end of the bridge, a form of kettling. And there's also been audio that's alleging that police were on the police radio and that one of the officers are in charge advised, you know, kettle everybody. And so I was arrested by two police officers from Strategic Response Group. They pulled up on the bicycles and they stopped me, and I told them right away, you know, I'm press. Hey, I'm press. Clearly put it in front of a face and everything, if it wasn't clear enough, hanging from my neck. And the officer said, I don't care. You were trespassing. You can't trespass on property, which it's not a thing. And it's not even what I got charged with at the end of the day.
Right.
So they put me in handcuffs, and I will say this, that compared to others, the press pass is likely what kept me from probably being violently arrested, because there was another photographer who didn't have a credential pass, but he was slammed to the ground and had scrapes on him. There's another gentleman that got slammed to the ground, had his ankle that he couldn't walk on, and he had deep like scrapes and cuts on his elbows from where they slammed him. And they rounded people up. I got treated differently from other people too, because there's people who had bags that could clearly be taken off, and they were just cutting away everyone's bags, no matter how much it cost, no matter how much they said, hey, you can take it off, it's a book bag. They didn't care, cut it off, you know. When there was a woman that was they were trying to take her necklace off. She requested that a female officer do it because the officer seemed like he's going to break the necklace or do whatever it is, and it to be searched, to please a female officer, and they did not listen. And when everyone was yelling at this person to, hey, you know, you need to have a female officer, she's requesting it. One of the officers said that, it doesn't have to be a female that does a field search, and went proceeded to do their field search on this woman protester. They loaded everyone up on vans and took us to the precinct, to which I was there, and I made sure, of course, as all along the way, hey, I'm press. Hey, I'm press. How do you feel? Resting press. Silent stares, of course. But the protesters, all of them, Nerdine included, and all the protesters that were there waiting, boisterous chants, telling every officer exactly which way the world seems to be flowing and letting them know exactly what they think, and proceeding to have endless chants, just filling the space and the area in the precinct. And they've got us to put us in the holding cell and such. At one point there was, just to make sure to mention, the woman that was apparently dragged by police when she was arrested. Not sure if she was arrested on the bridge or in the Grand Army Plaza area, that I wasn't able to ascertain. But she was bloody. She had blood coming through the mask that they had on her. You can see it staining through. Her keffiyeh covered in blood. She, like, her hands were bound in front of her, and they were, again, covered in blood. So whatever actions occurred by police in regards to arresting her, and I think, if my mind serves me correctly, it was a person, the same person also was bound and so tight that the hands were changing color, and was requesting to have that changed, and they did not change that. So it is just an evident and not surprising effort by the NYPD to try to intimidate and try to target people, and now, as it seems, press, as there were, as you said, other people that were detained and told to go over a fence, and two journalists were then detained for a short period of time. And
right. Against the fence. And it should probably be noted that the press is like the non-mainstream press. Like, there are no there's not mainstream press at any of these actions, no matter how big they are anymore. They've moved on. You know, maybe they just see us as, I don't know. Anyway, I think that's just interesting to note too. Say that, like, they're just arresting you or people like us because they see us just as protesters. I think they still know that, like, it's important, like, arresting press obviously makes less coverage of these things, but two, I think it's important to note that, like, the Times does not come out, no local well-known paper, nobody, you know, it's the resistance press that's there. But I think we should probably wrap up pretty soon, Neil. I want to hear from you about why you continue to do this. Why do you continue to go out on the streets after facing harassment? Why have you been so drawn to covering these protests since October 7th?
Well, no matter what, at the end of the day, no matter what I am documenting or covering or interviewing or doing, the one thing I always remember is that the truth of anything doesn't stop. It's with or without me, it keeps going. It keeps either growing, no matter what it may or may not be. And it's something that, if, you know, these people that these collective actions put themselves on the line, they have family that are on the line every day in Gaza and other places. And, you know, they don't get the option to stop. So if they don't get that same option, then I need to push through. I need to find a way to keep trying to get as much as I can before I have to go rest my head somewhere, you know? And I think that's something I try to remember, is that, you know, the truth doesn't stop, you know? You can either see it or you can be it, or you can be lucky and be both of it, but that's what we, it's what we do. It's the risk that we take to do, just like when you're out there.
Well, Neil's been doing some really incredible work for us of late. You can find it mostly on our Instagram, at The Independent, also at Neil Constantine. That's yours, right?
Yes, at Neil Constantine.
Yeah, NEILCONSTANTINE, or at The Independent. Look at some of his work. Give him some love. And that's a wrap for today, but thanks so much for joining us and continuing to cover this and being on the side of truth. It's very valiant.
Thank you all for allowing me the space to be able to express concerns, and hope that the people come together to help, as always, bring change for the better.
Absolutely. Right. Well, that's it for that. But that, you know, John, you know, that wasn't the only action happening yesterday.
No, it was a busy day around the country and around the world.
Yes, there were. So it happened in coalition with the sort of currently autonomous movement, I guess you could call it, called A15 Action. So that was for April 15th economic blockades for a free Palestine. So in addition to like protests happening on tax day all over the country and the world, you know, there were also many specific blockade actions, economic blockades. So this were blockading Israeli arms manufacturers or arms manufacturers that do trade with Israel in St. Charles, Missouri, Oakland, California, Maple Grove, Minnesota, Chicago at the Chicago O'Hare Airport, where we saw at least 41 arrests, I believe, in the Netherlands and Denmark and France, various places in the United Kingdom. There's actually a strong movement happening in Australia, even in New Zealand right now, and Beacon, New York, and then also a Pratt and Whitney, the factory that makes engines for Israeli warplanes, that's in Middleburg, Connecticut. Middletown, I'm sorry. That's in Middletown, Connecticut. Pratt and Whitney. It's confusing because it's the names of two colleges, but it is a dealer in engines that sells engines to bomb children in Israel. Sorry, I'm getting off my script if everybody can't tell. Pratt and Whitney is a factory in Middletown, Connecticut, and there was a blockade there, and we had some of our very own participating in that. They were effective in shutting down, you know, anybody going into or out of that for about 4 hours. There were major shutdowns around the country, and I just think it's important to note this, that the movement is not stopping.
Right. We had the Indies, Jonathan Rampagoa was on hand in Middletown outside the Pratt & Whitney factory, and we had footage from him up on independent Twitter and independent Instagram pages. So props to Jonathan for getting up there and being out there at a very early hour yesterday.
Yes. We actually have a very short clip. We can go to Jonathan and then greet our final guest. If you want to play that, Reggie, just of those protesters out there in Connecticut at 4 a.m.
No time is here.
We don't want no Iowa 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 here.
Pratt and Whitney, you can hide.
Pratt and Whitney, you can hide.
We charge you with genocide.
We charge you with genocide.
So just one of many economic blockades happening yesterday to end the genocide in Gaza. That was in Middletown, Connecticut at Pratt & Whitney factory.
Like I said, amazing day of protest. And let's see here. We'll pass on the music break. But before we do... Okay. All right. So I'm sorry. Just got our wires crossed here a little bit. We will go to a music break and then come back with our final guest, Cynthia Corinthia Carter from UAW Local 2330, who will give us an update on an important strike taking place in the city.
على أرض تلاقيني أنا نهلي أنا فديهم أنا دمي فلسطيني 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 أنا دمي فلسطيني
That was Muhammad Asaf by Blood is Palestinian. You are listening to the Independent News Hour on WBAI 99.5 FM. I'm John Tarleton. I'm also here with my co-host, Amba Gagarian. And before we move on to our final segment, I want to remind everybody that WBAI is in a fundraising emergency. We're trying to get caught up on the rent for the transmitter and the antenna at Four Times Square, absolutely essential to keeping this unique radio station on the air. You can pitch in and help out at 212-209-2950, or you can go to give2wbai.org. Last week, I was joined by Linda Perry, the program director, and just thank you to everyone who gave last week. We had seven people give almost $400, which was doubled with a matching grant to $800. So I certainly appreciate all the listeners who pitched in last week. And if you weren't able to give last week, well, this week's a great week to do it. What's that number one more time, Amba?
It's 212-209-2950, or you can go online to give2wbai.org. That's 212-209-2950, or give2wbai.org. And, you know, this has been the case forever. I don't mean to be so doomsday-y, but we're in information wars, you know, and we're losing, like, independent media, non-mainstream media, non-commercially sponsored or corporate sponsored media is sort of, you know, waning in general in the greater scheme of things. So I like to think of WBAI as a weapon of sorts. I mean, a weapon of peace, a weapon of resistance, a weapon of solace. So you could have one freaking station on the FM dial that will give you independent voices that challenge, you know, what you're hearing from the politicians and the elite that control so much of our lives. I think it's really important. So in that vein, give what you can, right? Like, if you're listening and you listen all the time and you're broke, I think as long as you're not super broke, you could probably, like, throw us $25 right now. Or you could give us $5 monthly. If you can give more and you understand the need for the station to stay on air, please do so. You can become a WBAI buddy for as little as $15 a month, which includes various perks. And you can do so in the name of the Independent News Hour to show us that, you know, this news that we work so hard to bring to you is worthwhile. Please give one time or monthly by calling 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950, and give the numeral to WBAI.org.
Right. You support this absolutely unique radio station, and you can help show support for the Independent News Hour. As Amba said, we put a tremendous amount of effort into bringing you this show every week with, you know, grassroots voices from across the city. I mean, we heard a few minutes ago from Neil Constantine, photojournalist arrested at a Palestine protest yesterday. We also spoke with a tenant organizer, Johnny Rivera, earlier in the show, and we're going to speak with a labor leader here in a moment from UAW Local 2330. So please support the Independent News Hour and WBAI, 212-209-2950, or go to give2wbai.org. Help keep that transmitter transmitting and sending the signal 90 miles in all directions in the greater New York region. We have an absolutely unique resource here. And just to also remind you, the kind of programming you're supporting besides the Independent News Hour, at 6 o'clock we have the half-hour edition of Democracy Now!, and then at 6:30, Left of Left, and then at 7 we'll have Revolutions Per Minute, the weekly show of the New York City DSA chapter. And they'll actually also have a second hour of Revolutions Per Minute from 8 to 9 p.m. And then starting at 9 p.m., we'll have Cat Radio Cafe for an hour to 10, and then The Sweet Spot from 10 p.m. till midnight, a couple of music shows. So, you know, you get this incredible news and public affairs programming, cultural programming, music shows, and you're support makes it all possible. 212-209-2950. We'll give that number out one more time at the end of the show. Now we're going to move on to our third and final segment. Here in New York, 109 legal aid workers with the Mobilization for Justice Union who do crucial work helping protect the rights of tenants and others who need civil legal services. They have been on strike for 8 weeks trying to get a fair contract that at least gives them pay raises that meet the rate of inflation and preserves their benefits. And recently they've been stepping up their actions, doing protests at the law offices of some of their prominent board members of Mobilization for Justice. And now we're going to be joined by Corinthia A. Carter. She is the president of UAW Local 2330. The Mobilization for Justice Union is a part of that UAW local. Corinthia A. Carter, welcome to WBAI.
Hi, thank you for having me. And I just donated. So donated $100. Okay. I want to do the
Corinthia.
Like, yeah. Sorry for cursing, but yeah.
We love the donation. Well, let's leave the four-letter words behind. But we certainly understand the sentiment, and we thank you for that powerful example there for anybody else who wants to follow you. So can you just we have a few minutes here. Kind of give a summary of why the Mobilization for Justice legal aid workers are on strike and what's at stake and why they're still on strike after 8 weeks.
So a slight correction. So we're a unit inside of the local, but yes. We kind of run independently. Like we're like pretty big as far as, you know, our unit goes. We're together with Legal Services NYC. We're about 640 members.
Okay.
MFJ is the smaller of the two. So sorry, what was your question again?
What's at stake in this strike and why has it dragged out for 8 weeks?
I mean, management has just refused to acknowledge, you know, as you said, like COLA, living in New York City, you know, respecting the work that's done. We're wall-to-wall union. Mm-hmm. And initially just wanted to move the attorney salaries and not really move too much on the lower paid workers who tend to be women of color. Mm. That was one of the things they, you know, before the strike, they were at 2.22%. They called it a move. They just offered 3% for 2.22% for the next 2 years, which is absolutely nothing. It's, you know, one of our chances, 2% don't pay the rent. And it doesn't, you know, New York City. You know, they're trying to like take back things that were already granted in the contract, such as the union having say in healthcare.
Mm-hmm. And now, if the board,
you know, they fired. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
sorry.
If the board doesn't want to adequately pay the legal aid workers who are on the front lines doing the work to protect tenants and others, what are they trying to use the resources of the organization for instead?
They haven't made it clear. They've been crying broke, but yet, you know, management has gotten their increases. You know, and that's why, which has caused this escalation. Just yesterday, members visited the house of one of the bargaining team members, management's members, and they did various actions on that because it's like people can't live with what they're offering. And this work is hard. This work is very hard because it's not just housing. You have immigration. You have like all these other civil services, civil legal services.
Like accessing disability benefits and things like that.
Yes.
I understand.
Yeah, family law. You have various things. You have social workers on hand. You know, it's like all these different issues that people face in New York City. And management is doing a horrible job without us, without our members. I've heard they defaulted on a case. you know, they're trying to like quickly get through cases. Not doing right by our clients.
And what does it mean to at this moment to be a UAW local? A UAW is so vibrant and militant right now, from the auto industry to higher education, and now you all have your strike going on, and I understand yours is a union that's been a militant for a long time, even preceding sort of this renaissance within the wider UAW.
Yeah, UAW just caught up to MFJ. MFJ has been militant. That's on record. Like, they have been fighting for not just, you know, their contracts, but for other folks and supporting others as well. You know, this is a new UAW. And what pushed that was one member, one vote, of course. Yeah. But yeah, this is a new UAW. We've you know, been lucky enough to get support from our regional, our local, even, you know, the UAW president, Sean Fain, even, you know, called out MFJ for hiring scabs.
Yeah, it's terrible. And we'll have to go here shortly. Is there anything people can do to support the workers while they're on strike?
Come out to the various pickets. Follow us on social media, MFJ Union. And we always alert folks of where, you know, what actions are going to happen, when they could come out. You know, it's 8 weeks, and we could definitely love to see new faces and folks out there supporting us.
Okay. Well, Corinthia A. Carter from UAW Local 2330, thank you so much for joining us this evening on WBAI, and also thank you for your generous support for this station.
Thank you. I'll continue. This wasn't a one-time thing. I'll continue to support. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So we're going to wrap it up here in a moment. Thanks for help on this show from Brian Carrillo, Neil Constantine, Jonathan Rampagoa, and our board operator, Reggie Johnson. Amba, what's our going away music tonight?
Well, we're going to be hearing Faramba from Pharoah Sanders. John.
Yes.
John.
Hello?
It's 2320.
Really?
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay. Don't worry.
Bye.